Hey everybody, thanks for joining us on another episode of Code Chat. My name is Jeremy Foster. You can find me online always at codefoster.com and on Twitter at @codefoster. And I'm joined today by Everett Carney. How are you doing today, Everett?
Good.
Everett is working with another one of the startups in the Microsoft Ventures group that you've met a few of over the last few episodes of Code Chat. Everett, why don't you tell us a little bit about what Slope does?
Yeah, so Slope is a media asset management and collaboration platform. Our goal is to help digital marketing agencies communicate better on their projects with their clients and provide a needed tool set that isn't quite there online yet.
What do you mean it's not quite there? What kinds of tools and what kinds of scenarios does this open up for people?
So right now, it's easy to store files online. It's easy to email back and forth, and it's easy to do project management. But there's no place where you can really do that all together effectively. And we are creating that platform.
So you and I are working together on a video for an advertisement. Mm-hmm. And maybe I shoot the raw video, and then I put that in, and then I communicate with you about it?
Yeah, so if you're shooting the raw footage, you would upload that footage to our product. And it's displayed in a nice little grid, and you can click on individual assets. So if you have multiple clips, you can talk about each clip individually, and it's all contained right there. You can select assets for approval, and then you can request approval from me because I would be your client.
Okay.
So I need to say, oh, I like this clip. Oh no, I don't like that clip. Oh, can we redo this one? Can we take like part of this and part of that? And it's really easy to get that information back to the creative team to make those edits, make those changes, and then they push up a new version, or they make that change, and it's like all real time, and it's right there.
So now I'm not trying to send an email with like the name of the file, and it's out here, and try to specify the timestamps to look at.
There's no link to Dropbox. Oh, go click this, download that. What was the file name again? You don't have to worry about that. It's all right there contained for you.
So I assume that you guys have seen a real need for this and you're trying to fill that need, right?
So TurnPro was a digital agency. So they've been around for a while. I've joined recently, so I'm still a little new to what the creative part of our company did before I got there. But basically, they would go out and make videos for their clients, and they realized that through the process that there was a difficulty, communicating back and forth and trying to say, oh, we like this sound, no, we don't like that sound. Like, can we change the song out? Can we, eliminate the last 5 seconds of this clip? And they looked around for a product to help them with that, realized that nothing really fit their list of needs, and decided to make it.
That's the way it always works, right? And we always write software for the pains that we're having.
That's how it should work.
So you joined this group recently, right?
Yeah, not too long ago. Going on 2 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did you set out to join a startup versus a larger company?
I did. I like small teams. I originally come from the video game industry. It's competitive, it's very fast-paced, and I really enjoyed that. I went out and specifically looked for that again. Mm-hmm. The quick turnaround, the fast iteration. We've got 3 people on the product team, so if something needs to happen, it happens really quick.
Make a phone call and then make it happen.
Yeah, you just turn around. You're like, hey, this is broken. This needs to be changed. This doesn't look good. Mm-hmm. Fix it. Go.
Yeah.
There's no time to waste. And it's fun.
So how would you say that a person, if we've got somebody in the audience that's thinking of a new role, and they're looking at startups, how can they prepare for a role as a developer, as a technical role in a startup?
I would say be very flexible. Be prepared to learn something new on a daily basis. Be prepared to shift into a role that you might have not expected. You might go from back-end engineer to front-end engineer to designer. Like maybe you need to write, maybe you need to contribute content.
If you are a back end person, maybe you need to go get a little bit of front end experience. If you want to work at a startup, you can't be so siloed. Am I right?
Correct. Okay. Yeah, and I would also say that be comfortable switching to a new language and be comfortable switching between frameworks.
Okay.
So if you're a Ruby guy or if you've been working a lot on Rails, maybe you need to switch to Node. Maybe you need to switch to MVC or. Maybe something new comes up that doesn't exist today. Everyone jumps on it. Everyone's like, oh, that's the best thing ever. And then a bunch of companies are hiring for that particular skill set. And you can choose to switch or you can stick with what you know.
Now, I've worked with your group a bit, and I know that you guys are using the web stack. I know and love the web stack. This is kind of my comfort zone. Can you tell me, though, as a startup, working as a startup on the web stack, what are the real advantages of making that choice? Because it's not necessarily a no-brainer. I mean, we used to feel more comfort, more security in relying on these strong back-end frameworks, server-side technologies to back our solution, and then sure, we'd use our web stack for the front end for all the UI stuff, but now we're using it for like sometimes the entire stack. So why don't you talk to me a little bit about the ups and the downs of using the web stack for real business.
Yeah, so we're on Node, and we made the decision to switch from Rails to Node for mostly because I enjoy Node. You know, there's a lot of technical argument back and forth about which one's better and why and what scenarios each one fills well. With the high request volume and the ability to use things like Socket.io and the strong ecosystem around it, I decided to choose Node. That gives us the advantage of, I mean, so I love the web stack. You can build up an API, and you can use that API to serve web pages and request information and work with, you know, databases and anything that you need on the web, which translates to, you know, from desktop to mobile. Browsers are everywhere. You could probably pull it up on a console, you know, and that's cool.
Link browser.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a good use case for us for that, but I'm sure someone could find something.
Yeah.
But because it's just a web endpoint, you can also write native apps, and you just hit that endpoint and pull the JSON back that you need, provide any authentication that you have to provide. The ecosystem around web apps is very strong. It's very portable and it's very extensible, and I love that extensibility. Mm-hmm. And the fast-paced changing is something that really brings me in and keeps my attention and keeps me learning and keeps me enjoying what I do.
Yeah, that fast-paced change is a good thing, and it's also a tough thing.
It is.
One of the tough things about the web stack is keeping up with the new way of doing things. It seems like it's out all the time. What's your UI framework?
So we're using React, which is Facebook's front end JavaScript framework. Mm-hmm. I love it. I think it's so cool. You just write component after component after component, and you can break them out and refactor and make them into smaller and smaller pieces so that you're reusing pieces where you need it. So, you know, one of the things we recently did was refactor the way that we display assets. And because we have images and video, and we have different types of video, and so you can't display an MP4 in the same way that you display a PNG.
Yeah.
It doesn't work on the web.
Yeah.
So we were able to write just a few lines of code, and we swap out the component on the fly based on the file type. And it was just so easy to do, and it was so nice, and solved what potentially could have been a big problem for us. It allowed us to sort of alter the way that we build our database even, because now we store a file URI and the file type, and we just pull that information out of the JSON and say, hey, this is a video and it's an MP4, so display it like this, and just swap in this one little three-line component, and oh, it's just an image. Okay, well, that's just a one-line component with image and some styling. Oh, we use all inline styles.
Interesting.
Yeah, we don't use any, we don't have like a style sheet.
Which we've all heard very strong recommendations against.
Yeah. So we had a guy come into the accelerator, and he works on a product called Radium. And Radium is built to work with React, and Facebook has switched to inline styles, or is switching, according to this guy. And his team, their local group, they developed Radium, and it allows us to build these big JSON files that are essentially CSS, but all you do is include the JSON object for the specific styling that you need per component, and it renders it inline on the fly, and supposedly is a big performance gain, which makes sense because you don't have to go iterate over a CSS file to pull in the styles for your elements. They're just right there. The browser can just pick them up.
Okay, so we're not talking about manually maintaining inline styles, which is one of the huge reasons not to do
it.
We're talking about a different way to do it that ends up just kind of compiling down to inline styles.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
And it's really nice to, you can require your previous JavaScript files and pull in these it's kind of like, you know, SAS or one of the other compiled CSS languages.
Yeah.
In that way, but I really like it. I've had fun using it, and I'm a big. I really enjoy the front end. I really enjoy doing web animation specifically, and it's so fascinating to work with this inline way of doing things rather than, you know, inheriting classes down.
Seems like one of the fundamental principles that we always come back to is this. the difference between doing things in a directive or declarative way versus the ability or the power to do things in an imperative way. And whenever we have something like, you know, HTML that's inherently declarative or CSS by itself is inherently declarative, you just put the definition of what you want in there and then it takes care of it. That's easier and more descriptive, but not as powerful. And so then we get into, there's usually, it seems like a way that that becomes imperative, where we get something like less or something like SAS that gives us the ability to describe some colors and then use those colors. You know, just a little bit of an imperative logical flow to those types of things. And that brings in the power, but it also brings in the complexity. And then the next thing to emerge is frameworks, you know, maybe like Radium, you know, where a framework comes in and it handles the complexity and makes it feel declarative, but it still gives you the power to do what you need to do. That seems like the evolution that I've seen over and over in the web stack.
It's like a pattern that shows up. It's like, oh, here's this cool thing. Oh, well, that's kind of difficult. Well, what if we built this thing to sort of encapsulate this cool thing? Mm-hmm. Oh, that works. And then you have, you know, Radium and Angular and React. And
any advice on, I've talked with a lot of people that feel completely lost trying to keep up with the latest version. You know, pick your JavaScript framework, whatever .js is out, and people go, I didn't even know that was a thing. there are a lot of people that have hardly heard about React because there's so much excitement about a lot of other frameworks.
Well, I mean, 2 months ago, I had never heard of it. Mm-hmm. I caught wind of it, and I sort of looked at the page once and never thought of it again, and then all of a sudden, this guy comes in, and I have a little bit of a background in 3D animation and graphic design, so the inline styles and the ability to work with things more directly really spoke to me because it felt like I was working back in Maya or I was working back in Photoshop.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, ooh, this is cool. So I jumped on it and, you know, I saw the power of it and I had done Backbone before and I'd done a little bit of Angular and I was, you know, it just clicked better. It felt better. The best way I think to keep up is to pick something that you like and then try to understand it on a fundamental level rather than an explicit level. So, you know, just because Backbone is set up in a way where it, you know, it's got like a render and then you can name your functions and call them wherever.
Mm-hmm.
It's more about how it's handling the data. It's like, okay, well, what forces an update? Where is the data stored? Is, you know, does this have components? Does it do something else? Focus more on that, you know, how the frameworks work rather than the actual syntax.
Yeah,
I think that's sort of like this computer science teacher response to, but what language should I learn? I think for me that's helped me just think of things as like, well, okay, well, where does stuff get drawn? Oh, it's right there. There's the render function.
Yeah.
How do I declare a state? Oh, there it is. Yeah.
There are two things that I usually recommend when, you know, people feel lost like that. One of them, very pragmatic, is a podcast called 5 Minutes of JavaScript. Have you ever heard it?
Uh-uh.
5 minutes of JavaScript or 5JS or JS5, I forget what they call it, but go searching for that because it's wonderful. It's literally 5 minutes in a week, but they race through a bunch of new things. You know, there's this new framework that's trying to do this. There's a little bit of community support for it. It looks pretty cool. End of story.
Nice.
Next issue, you know, and so that really is helpful in trying to keep up to speed on what's out there. New frameworks, community reaction to old frameworks, tutorials, documentation, things like that. That's really helpful. The other thing is when a new technology comes out, don't feel like you have to go figure the whole thing out.
Right.
Go, like you said, learn the high level concepts. The what's this for? Where does this fit? Like, oh, okay, this is another MVC framework. That's great. That helps me to recognize when I would use this. And then go to the website. I remember when Docker first came out, I went to Docker and I ran through their excellent tutorial. And I was like, okay, I get it. I'm not a Docker developer yet, you know, but I at that point felt like I get the concept. I know why this exists now. And that was really helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. I love, you know, no matter how much experience I feel like I'm ever going to gain, I will always go back and do those half-hour 101 style tutorials. Yep. Like, hey, here's how this thing works. You know, here's where it starts. Here's where it ends. Here's how whatever you need for this particular item goes from A to B.
Even if for whatever reason you've already kind of written this technology off, like if you know you didn't, somebody else told you about it and you say, well, that doesn't sound good, still force yourself to go through that half-hour tutorial and figure out why it is that you might not like it.
Yeah, well, and then you can talk to people about it. And being able to talk to people about it, maybe form friendship, network, like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
There's no downside to learning something new.
Yeah. Cool. Well, you know what? I think we're going to go ahead and wrap up. This has been a good chat. Is awesome. There anything else you want to share with developers? We've got a lot of developers watching right now.
just, you know, go out and always pick something new to learn. I think that's the thing, that's helped me the most is no matter how much I think I know about something, I always go out and learn something else that contradicts whatever I've learned before.
Okay.
And then I at least have a good reason to not do something.
And I guess you can speak from experience because you said you were in 3D and then you, development's quite different.
Originally I wanted to be a video game animator.
Okay.
Yeah, and so that was my starting point and got into MelScript, which was Python, and took a couple of CS courses, and here I am.
Realized that, wow, it's pretty powerful.
Yep, no reason to ever limit yourself.
All right, cool, well thanks, that's good advice.
Yeah.
All right, and thank you for joining us on Code Chat this time. We certainly look forward to joining us next time on Code Chat. See ya.